Hi, this is David Sweet, CEO and founder of Focus Core Japan. And if you are like many of the APAC leaders that I speak to, you're struggling in Japan to find the right talent. You get bombarded with irrelevant resumes or a lack of resumes altogether. I would like to invite you to discover the power of Focus Core's retained search. Let Focus Core help you swiftly secure top-tier talent in this candidate short market. I'd like to invite you to shoot me an email and explore how we're different, and with 100% refundable trial, we can revolutionize your hiring process today. Now on to our podcast.
One of the questions I love to tease CEOs about and leadership about is, we're having challenges with recruitment. We're not finding enough people. Then my first question is, why should they join your company in the first place? We offer these benefits, career opportunities, like everybody else offers that. I said, what do you offer?
Welcome to the Focus Core podcast. I'm very excited today to be joined by Tyson Botino. This is an episode that you'll want to listen to for APAC companies looking to open businesses in Japan and small companies in Japan looking to scale and grow their organization. So welcome, Tyson.
Hey, glad to be here, David.
So I'm going to go through this the bio that you gave me, because I think you wear many hats and have intriguing background, and I really like the bio you had on your website. So I got you're advising small business owners and startups on how to scale your businesses in Japan from six figures to eight figures, and you're also doing a lot of coaching around running the organization. You're the co-founder and director of Japan Switch and OneCoin English, which if you're in Japan, you've definitely heard that. It's Japan's eighth largest English school for adults, and two-time resident mentor at 500 Global Japan, one of the top startup accelerators in the world. You've got expertise in scaling companies and a passion for mentoring business leaders and founders. You're bringing invaluable insights and improving your recruitment pipeline and processes. So we're going to be talking a lot about recruitment today, I bet, based on both of our backgrounds. So welcome, Tyson.
Hey, very glad to be here and very excited to talk about recruitment. I think I've done around 60 podcast episodes for my Scaling Japan podcasts. I've also been interviewed maybe like 10 to 15 times. And I've never talked about recruitment, which is actually one of the areas like I feel very, very confident about. And so so it's good. This will be my chance to share my recruitment philosophy to the world.
Nice. And I know you've been in Japan a long time, but I was going back through after we spoke last week and thinking through, we must have met each other first time about 15 years ago at Sales Circle. In Ebis, right?
Yeah, we met definitely more than 10 years ago. Maybe I think, yeah, like 13
I think it was
years
15
ago.
Years ago, right? Yeah. But for those of our listeners who have not listened to several of your podcasts, which are great, or seen your videos, give us a kind of a background, a quick snapshot of your background, please.
Cool. I'll just give a quick personal introduction and also maybe share a bit about my personal background that can cover the reasons like why should I listen to this guy?
Nice.
But, so I've been in Japan since 2004, so about 19 years. I'm half Japanese. I had to learn Japanese from zero, but I was able to get N1. And so I do have business level Japanese. And I've lived in four parts of Japan. First in Kyoto, Nara, then Yokohama, Kanagawa, and now Asahikawa in Hokkaido. So four parts of Japan. I uncovered David, I think around 15 years ago when I was leaving the English teaching industry and I wanted to get some business skills. And David was doing some free seminars I was a very poor teacher at the time, and I was very appreciative for David for providing free sales seminars using the sweet method.
Thanks. Thank you for that.
And so that's kind of my personal background. But in terms of my professional background, I was a teacher for about 4.5 years. I was an assistant manager and trainer at a company called Interact, which has around 3,000, I think, foreign teachers in Japan. So I think it's the second biggest employer of foreign teachers in Japan after the Japanese national government. While there, I managed 150 full-time teachers, and I didn't do recruitment, but I had to manage the effects of recruitment. It made me very interested in recruitment at the time, because I had to do a lot of damage control and the importance of if you can get the right people, it'll make your managers much happier. But after that, I did that for about 3 years. And I eventually rose to run, I think, the company's most important client, which was Yokohama City. I think the biggest, Board of Education in Japan. But after that, I found OneCoin English with two Japanese guys. And I was in charge of recruitment, training, and management of the foreign teachers. And so during this process, I actually developed and created our recruitment and hiring, and more importantly, recruitment branding for the teacher side, the foreigner side. And I also advised the Japanese side on how to improve their recruitment process, because we were hiring a lot of people. And I think the numbers are definitely much higher than this, but I know we've hired more than 800 teachers and probably had over 20,000 applicants.
Wow.
So I developed a system to handle scale and get a lot of applicants. And I'm proud to say that I started running our subsidiary, a Japanese language school, from 2019. But I think we used our first paid job ad in 2021 after 7 years. And I would say that was probably because I was involved with the subsidiary and not, I wasn't involved in recruitment branding anymore.
Okay.
So I'm very proud to say that I've never paid for a job ad.
Pretty impressive in the education world, right?
And for next, I was essentially wasn't entitled, but I was the CEO of our subsidiary, Japan Switch. We just kept it in. It was a subsidiary in principle, but not legally. But I had to learn marketing and finance from scratch. And I was able to scale the business to 200 students using only Facebook ads.
Nice.
In Japan. So I'm very proud of that. I've had, I think, 5 ads with over 1,000 likes and 100 comments and shares. And this in Japan, the foreign market's not that big. So that's actually like I don't know. Maybe I can think of one or two other people who have achieved the same feat. And our SEO has over 60,000 visitors a month. And I think our email list is 15,000 plus.
Nice.
And now I'm scaling your company, which my wife supported me during my time at OneCoin English. And she wanted to move to Hokkaido. And after working essentially maybe like 8 years, like 50, 60 hours a week, I wanted to wind down. So built a subsidiary. Then once I got everything good, COVID happened. Then our COO had to leave and I had to take over. And I was like, okay, I'm tired of working 60 hours at basically running operations in Japanese. So I was like, okay, I don't really want to continue working 60 hours a week. And so I was like, okay, I'll do it. So with my service now scaling your company, I had to learn B2B from scratch. I would say B2B marketing wasn't too hard to learn because I've already understood it from a B2C standpoint, but I had to learn B2B sales from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm kind of, what I'm proud to say is I'm advising around 30 companies at the moment, mm-hmm. Usually meeting them 1 to 4 times a month. And I'm advising around 25 small businesses
mm-hmm.
and startups with marketing, sales, product, and team management. And I'm coaching 5 leaders on running a quickly scaling business. And what I define as a quickly scaling business is one that doubles in size every year. So if you have 4 employees, 8, 16, 32, and just it's not normal to really grow that fast. And so it's just helping leaders upgrade their mindset
mm-hmm.
for the next stage. And because if you want to double your company size every year, you don't have time to learn through trial and error.
Fair enough. Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there, Tyson. I know we got some things we want to talk about, but I'd like to, one of the things that you mentioned was Facebook ads, for example. Are, in your opinion, I've not used those before for recruitment.
Mm.
Do you find them effective, or is that specifically towards like English school, foreign people
reaching? So this one was, I've done Facebook ads more for getting customers.
Interesting.
But
okay.
In terms of if I were to, I haven't done it for hiring, mm-hmm. but if I were to do it, it's you really need something that's sellable. So like, for example, if I was going to hire video game testers,
mm-hmm.
so something that's, you know, people are really like, oh, this is really cool, this is something I want to share with my friends, then I think you could get probably pretty good results using Facebook ads. But it has to be something that it's cool, it's something they want to share with their friends. Otherwise, you're going to be spending a lot of money. But and the key for Facebook is the more people who engage with your posts, it's, let's say, the cheaper your ad spend is and the more people that see it. And hopefully that will result in a much lower customer acquisition costs.
Where would you put, because I think, you know, along with TikTok or Instagram, Line, Twitter, where would you put, is Facebook even viable for, I mean, it seems like if people over 50 use Facebook in Japan, but you get then kind of the 30, 40s Instagram, and then really everybody's using Line in Japan as far as their marketing. What do you think?
Yeah, I guess I think it could work for the foreign market, especially for entry-level jobs. But in terms of finding senior level people, I would not use Facebook. But it could work for entry level positions. I'll say, especially in Japan's case, probably if you're hiring someone, maybe someone from like Southeast Asia who's in Japan, I think Facebook could be very effective for that.
Good information. I know I'm old school. I still headhunt for my senior leadership. Most people I'm looking for aren't on social media. So
yeah, I feel I would say if I were targeting senior leaders, I probably would have considered it before the Apple iOS privacy updates, because that's back then, or I can say it now because you can't do it anymore, but yeah. I would target the English teachers to study in our Japanese school from our competitors. So I'll say we actually we had a pretty solid percentage of our English school competitors, their teachers studying at our Japanese language school. And I was able to target, oh, this person, Berlitz, send them an ad. You work for ECC as a teacher, send them an ad. And so there was that level of precision before the iOS updates. But you don't have that anymore. So, I did find that very hilarious that I think like 25% of our customers were from our competitors.
And what kind of businesses are you working with now? You said you're kind of advising 25 companies.
Yeah. So I guess one thing is I don't advise or too many companies on recruitment. Mm-hmm. The reason is I feel like most people can't carry out my recruitment ideas on recruitment branding. Like the level of leadership needed to carry it out and the, I would say, the execution by the managerial staff to initiate, because it's basically like changing your company culture.
Yeah.
Like it's, and often, but so that's why I've advised two corporations on how to do recruitment branding, but I do find it very hard for them to implement it. But I wanted to share my ideas today so people can kind of pick and choose some of the ideas. But ultimately, I think the leadership is typically an issue. And also, or if there is, the leadership has the idea, they either don't have the team or they don't have, they can't get buy-in of their team to implement it. So it's either lack of talent or an inability to get buy-in, which I would consider an issue of leadership.
Makes sense. Yeah, I'm working with a lot of clients for their employer branding. And the other things that I see, one's time. Just it takes some people, it does take a little time and consistency. Not a lot of time, but there is some thought that goes into it. And some people just don't feel comfortable putting themselves out there. And the big one with foreign companies in Japan, we've talked about other times here, is that HQ won't let you.
Yes, I've been finding that. I've had to refuse a couple of requests because like we had no control over the website. Yes, no, that is a very, very great point to mention as well.
Yeah, I find like I keep on running into companies that say, well, I could say use your Instagram account would be great for employer branding because that's where all their customers are on there. And some of their customers may want to join these, you know, FMCG companies, but they're not allowed to do local Instagram posts. That's all run by HQ.
And like some cases, they can't even create a local LinkedIn page for Japan. So they show all these pictures of non-Japanese, non-Asian people. And Japanese people can't relate. No, I think that was a good point. Like I would say for the leadership side, for me, that was more towards Japanese companies. Who are trying to hire Japanese people. But no, I think you made a very, let's say, for the foreign, let's say, corporations in Japan.
We were talking, you had a lot of ideas around designing interview experiences. Talk to me more about that.
So, and I did want to give one kind of background. So when I was the manager at Interact, when I took over their most important client, I actually did a survey of employee satisfaction. And it was a 2.3 out of 5. And so it was in the, they were not satisfied. Three is like, yeah, the company's okay. So it was a 2.3 and I had 150 employees. So it's, so that was kind of the background. After 1 year, I brought it up to a 3.8. And I think anything above that would have been, I would have needed a buy-in from above. And I didn't think that was possible. That was kind of, I'll make a company, but, and the second one with One Coin English, we actually pay teachers below market rates. So it's, I don't have a brand name. I don't have salary. So we needed something special. And we were a fast growing company. Some year in the beginning, we tripled in size. You know, then after that, doubled in size. And so we're a really fast growing company. And we had to hire a lot of teachers. And because it's the name One Coin English, it's a, let's say, is that was actually my test. Is like, you don't have a budget, but go hire teachers. And I was like, oh my God. At Interact, we just have a very nice contract with Gaijin Pod. We give them, and we post, let's say, post as many posts as we want. We just pay them a large, large sum of money. I was like, wait, I can't use Gaijin Pod? I can't use jobs in Japan? How am I going to find teachers? And so that's kind of the context of like I was put in situations where I didn't have brand, I didn't have budget. So I had to become very creative in finding novel solutions to solve important company challenges.
Mm.
But yeah, going back to the question of the importance of a positive interview experience for candidates. It's so like in my case, we really need people to have a very positive interview experience with us, because we're not a name like, you know, Google, Amazon, GE, Nike. Their recruiters could be, I'm not saying they are, they could be subpar.
Mm.
But because of the brand name, people will still join their company. Or they offer such a high amount of salary that like you could tolerate incompetence and negligence from the big brands. They just have that leeway. But my company paid below market rates. No one knew about us. Our first location was in Kabukicho, which is, we called it our Shinjuku school for branding reasons.
Yeah.
But it's, so in my case, it's because people don't trust us from the beginning. We're posting on like free job boards at first.
Mm.
People don't trust us. So the only weapon I do have, or the thing that I do have control over, is I don't have budget, but I can create a positive experience for them that I could increase the likelihood if they were to choose between 3 to 4 companies, they would choose mine because they trust. After meeting us, which they don't trust us before, they trust our company and that we'll take care of them. And this is a company that they'll like to work for, even though they might have offers offering them 25% more, 30% more. In many cases, people, if someone who wanted like if someone who wanted double what we paid, which other companies did pay, I'll say we couldn't compete with double, but I think we could compete with 25 to 50% more hourly rate, meaning like I think we're paying like 1200 at the time, and people often choose over 2000 yen per hour places, and even 2000, but 3000 we couldn't compete with that. But so that was what I had control over. And just to give you an example, it's and the reason I came up with this idea is because when I first interviewed for Interact, I read online reviews. There's pretty much there's more negative comments on like Reddit and at the time Gaijinpot forums about Interact than positive. There's like horror stories of, let's say, a guy getting like, let's say, locked in a room, he claimed, or something like, or like they blocked his way, and like crazy stories. But anyhow, when I actually went to the interview, I was nervous. I didn't trust them because I read all these negative things. And doubt she's listened to it, but Shannon, if you're listening, one of the managers, she came in just like, hey, how's it going? Like, are you comfortable? Like, how was your day? And I was like, oh, wow, this person's really nice. Like this seems like a company I would like to work for.
Mm-hmm.
And so like just her doing that actually made me say, okay, I actually want to join this company. And so she was the ambassador because they had a bad brand name.
Mm-hmm.
But in my case, I just said, like, we don't have a brand name. So, and I think I'll share it later, but I think we ended up having, I think 25% of our applicants came through referrals.
Mm-hmm.
It's just people who didn't get the job, people who got the job, people are just referring their friends. I don't think you could achieve 25% in a corporate, especially senior level role.
Yeah.
But the fact that 25% of our applicants, and we were getting like 200 a month, so around 50 applicants a month, was from word of mouth, because people who we didn't hire were telling their friends, oh, this company is really cool, the way they treated me. It was the best interview experience I've ever had. Many people have said that. Is the most positive interview experience.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot to I say with an interview experience, because I think so many companies, you go in and during an interview process, you might have three of the same interview. feel like the interviewers don't talk, they don't greet you very well. Or I best experience I had was Apple. I think Apple, the recruiters that I worked with there, they made every candidate want to join the company.
Awesome.
They were doing the evaluation because they realized that they are the, I love your phrase, ambassadors for the company. And I think, especially when you think you're evaluating a candidate, but in this candidate short market, it's imperative to be able to evaluate and sell at the same time.
Right. And I'll phrase it, let's say companies are evaluating the C players.
Yeah.
But A players are evaluating you.
Absolutely. I'd almost come back and say, well, I'd say B and C players nowadays are actually can evaluate too. It's a pretty tight market.
Gotcha. Thanks for the.
There's a lot of choices. I'm surprised in this market how that works. What do you think, a couple of things that companies, do's and don'ts, if you were to throw a couple out there just off the top of your head?
I think you shared probably one of the really big ones is, do they have to do anything repetitive?
Hmm.
And so one example is the same questions. I think another one is not stating what they mentioned in a previous interview. Oh, you mentioned this to such and such.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to give you more context on this. Like, who has ever experienced that? Like, probably not that often.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a big one, like eliminating redundancy. Because from the candidates, and you're just wasting their time.
Yeah.
Especially for someone, I guess, I would say someone who has options, but I guess B and C players have options too now. So, and even C players will notice this. Like A players, they are like an A player, they'll be like, basically, like, this is pathetic.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of one of the big ones. And the other one is, I think, especially when you meet the hiring manager, mm-hmm. like, are they just winging it? Like, or did they actually check your resume? Check with the people who did the screening process, maybe the recruiters who did the first interview. And like, does the hiring manager even remember your name or mm-hmm. something personal about you? Like, oh, I heard that you're from this state or something like that. Like, oh, I've been there once. Like, even something simple as that will probably often set you apart. I think David would probably have better data than I do, but would probably set you apart from whatever percent of companies. The other one too, like I think where, like how often does the country manager come in and say hello?
Mm-hmm.
Like I think even something like that, like where they see the country manager, especially if it's a person where they're going to be taking like a senior level role, where they're making a big jump, like maybe they're comfortable in their position, but maybe they're going to take a jump. Like, just meeting the country manager for like a couple minutes and like the country manager saying, here's our vision.
Yep.
Like that could make a huge difference. So I think one of the weaknesses of not well-designed interview process is where it's isolated or siloed to the recruitment department.
Yeah.
Where as opposed to a collaborative effort with leadership, where acquiring the best talent is, a top three strategic priority. So I'll say that the one that's, I would say, is kind of tricky is, the other one I think that's huge too is length of time. Like, how quick are your responses? How quick can you set up an interview? And nowadays, I guess BC players have options, but A players, like, they'll probably pick something like 1 month. So you need to be on their timeline, not them on your timeline. So I think that's probably the case now. If you're struggling with recruitment, you're probably going at your organizational timeline, whereas opposed to you need to adapt to the applicant's timeline,
mm-hmm.
where they might be getting a couple of job offers. And if your job isn't significantly better, like, you know, like magnitude of out of 10, like 2 to 3 points better, they're probably not going to wait.
Yeah.
And so things like, you know, where the country manager comes in and says hello and gives him the vision, you know, that even if, let's say, they have other offers, they might give you like a couple weeks leeway, 1 more month leeway, just on that small 2 minutes.
Yep. You were, give a pitch up to, for you and Andrew Hankinson. You're on Andrew's podcast a few months ago that I listened to. And Andrew was my first guest on my podcast. And I think I was his first guest on his podcast. We had, but he does that. He'll jump, if he's around, he'll jump into interviews that aren't his quote unquote interview. They're HR or the hiring managers. And he'll go in and say hello, and because he knows that it works. I'll put a link in our show notes to a podcast that I did about creating a top grading interview process. But the point of the punchline is it doesn't need to be any sort of process, but the importance is the team, a company needs to create a process and stick to that process and then improve the process incrementally as they go through. But if you're just winging an interview process, the interview experience is going to be pretty shabby.
And I do have to give a shout out to Andrew as well. Like, I think he's a master of relating to people at all stages of the organization.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, let's say, that is a masterclass in how to communicate with people. And also, it's one of the best, I would say, it's the most I've ever been researched in my life when I appeared on his podcast.
Like, he's very good, right?
Yeah, I think he told me he literally spent like 4 hours. And I was like, oh my God, like, you've researched me more than I researched myself. but yeah, those were some like tactical solutions that you could implement to provide a better interviewee experience. So like, and how I kind of think of it too, like, I just kind of thought about it like when, you know, you have a startup or a SaaS software, they call like user experience, you know. And I kind of think of it, what is the candidate experience? I don't think that's an actual term, like, you know, like CX, but what is your candidate experience?
Yeah. And so one of the things that you do in sales, I always talk about, you create, a salesperson creates an experience. Disney, you go into Disney, you get a Disney World, the Disneyland experience. You go into Universal, same concept, same price point, but it's a different experience. They're both fine, but they're different experiences. So what experience are you creating for that candidate? And it's a candidate-centric approach when you start using words like experience, which I love, Tyson, that you've brought that out there, because I think we always talk about interview processes. We don't speak about interview experiences and switch that empathetic viewpoint to the candidate. And what experience are we giving them through the first interview? As soon as they walk in the office, first interview, second interview, as they come and leave, greetings, all those simple niceties. That goes a long ways, right?
Yeah, it does go a huge way. Because one of the questions I love to tease CEOs about and leadership about is, we're having challenges with recruitment. We're not finding enough people. Then my first question is, why should they join your company in the first place? We offer these benefits, career opportunities, like everybody else offers that. I said, what do you offer?
Mm-hmm.
There's only been a few cases where I've been impressed. And I will say one of the cool ones is I do like how Randstad have that CEO for a day. Yeah. I think they could definitely promote it much better. But because they're famous, I think they can get a pretty big reach. But I think they could promote that better. But I think that's a really cool program.
That's great. Now talk about like kind of what you believe the interview of a well-designed interview process is on employer branding.
Yeah, it's so I think the main, I think really speed is a huge one.
Mm.
And the other one, I think also like for me, a good experience is they make promises on when they'll get back to you by, and mm-hmm. they maintain that promise. Because the candidate, they're wearing, let's say, they are weighing other job offers, and they're trying to create a timeline in their head. And let's say you not setting a deadline, like we will give you, we're going to make a decision by this date. It's it creates trust. And if you meet that deadline, and even if you say no, you're going to be better than pretty much most other corporations, because barely, not that many people, let's say, they don't make promises. And so just the fact that you're a company that keeps your promise, I think would be a huge difference.
Great takeaway.
And so could you ask that question again? Sorry.
So for the impact of what do you feel like the impact of a well-designed interview process is on employer branding?
Yes. So I think a big one is, it was more of a small business I was helping, and one corporation though is I actually asked them like, what percent of your employees refer their friends? How many referrals do you get? And I don't have enough data to know like what is a gold standard. And I think my previous companies, because we're hiring for entry level people, it wouldn't serve as a good reference. Like no one's going to achieve 25%. Other than us because of our target audience. But just evaluating like how many employees are introducing a friend. And like for me, if I would ideally at least want each employee to introduce one or two friends per year. If they're not introducing one or two friends a year, that means your company's either they're very introverted, or the extreme cases where they don't meet anyone that you're looking for. But more often the case is probably you're not worth introducing. And so I think that's, if your employees are not introducing their friends to your company, that's a key sign. If you're senior level leaders, they're not bringing in people they manage in previous companies to your company, your company probably sucks.
Fair enough.
And so I think that's... Oh, sorry.
No, I agree with you 100%. Because I, as a recruiter, when I go in and consult with executives, one of my first questions is, do you have an employee referral program? And is it working? It seems like it's much better to pay your employees than it is to pay a recruiter.
And I would say the gold standard is we didn't pay employees to refer their friends. But they still did.
Yeah. I was going through with a friend in HR last week and speaking to him, and they get a lot of referrals internally. And we both agreed that employee referral programs with around money don't necessarily work that well. It's because people do it out of the goodness. But I do think it's important that there is a program in place, whether it's monetary or not, just to have people talking about, because a lot of times companies aren't telling their employees that they're hiring and what they need.
There's also that communication. I can give one tactic that I've shared with a couple of corporate clients, but I told them they should just give a budget to employees to have dinner with friends.
Wow.
And that's your referral program right there.
Good one. Yeah.
Because I think they misunderstand that the reason the people are introducing, like, even if you give them $2,000, like $2,000-$3,000, people aren't going to risk their relationship over $2,000-$3,000 if they're making $5,000 a month. So it doesn't answer the question of creating opportunities for them to refer their friends. So if you give them the money to take people out to dinner, friends out to dinner, that will at least solve the problem of providing a space where they could talk to their friends about your company.
Mm-hmm. What about, we were talking a little bit about, you know, having feedback and communication. You're very big on, looking through your website, you're very big on transparency and having open communication with people. Talk about that as far as making a good impression.
Yes, I'll have to make a big caveat. I'm very big on feedback and transparency, but if in a corporate setting, I would definitely be more cautious. Mm-hmm. But I'll start with my own case. So I think we were actually the first major school that gave feedback to candidates who didn't get the job. And that was a principle, like everyone who didn't get the job, it's one, you weren't prepared here.
Mm-hmm.
Or let's say you didn't understand this point. And that's why we didn't move you to the next stage. So we're always very clear. Like, because of this, that's why you didn't move on to the next stage.
That's brilliant. One of the things I do in my interviews, I would say 80% of the time, I will give feedback to the applicant in the interview. At the end of the interview, I'll say, you know, here's what I think.
Wait, could you give us, actually, I'll throw the question back.
Yeah. So,
could you give us some examples of like feedback you've given?
Sure.
People.
Yeah, I mean, for hiring us internally. If it's good feedback, if I'll tell people why exactly I think that they're a good fit, and perhaps one or two things that they might be missing that they might need to work on for next interviews. On the flip side, by the time we get to the end of the interview, because of the questions that I've asked and how I've moved the conversation, they're fairly comfortable that they're not a good fit for the organization, but we like each other at the end. I've enjoyed our conversation, and based on what we're looking for and what your career aspirations, we can see clearly there's a mismatch.
Oh, I get you.
But I've really enjoyed discussing this with you today, and I hope that we can keep talking sometime.
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that. That reminds me, I guess one type of feedback too is we'll say, yeah, we're actually not a cultural fit, but I think this place is for you.
I've done that. Yeah.
And yes, that's kind of my thoughts there.
Because that's one of the things that we both agree on is the idea of helping people, and it will come around that I'm not going to hire out of 50 people, I'll be lucky if I hire one or two of those people for my organization. I'm happy for those other 48 people to get a job if I can help them.
One way I've phrased it personally that I think rings for most people is I'll tell them like, you know, you've done the screening, you've come in for two interviews, mm-hmm. and I'm sorry, but I can't offer you the position.
Mm-hmm.
But you've committed time, you've paid for your transportation to come here to meet with us, and for you to go home empty-handed, I think that would be a shame. So I would like to give you some feedback to help you with your future job interviews.
Yep.
And just give it
there. Great. That's great. Especially if they're good candidates, they'll appreciate that, I think. We were initially sitting down talk about the podcast. We'd started comparing recruitment pipeline to sales pipeline. let's dive into that for a bit.
Sounds good. It's so I guess my basic thought was the bigger your pipeline, or the more let's say in our case, the more applicants that we have, the more selective we could be.
Mm-hmm.
And that meaning, and also that also serves as a good promotional point, where in our case, we would say like, I don't remember the percentage now, but it's like we only hire 3% of applicants or 2% of applicants. And so I think other companies ended up copying that, but that was one thing we did. So one, there's a promotional aspect to customers, but also from our end, by being more selective, we're able to retain people longer by mm-hmm. choosing the right people. So I think, and for me, that was really big because in a previous company, sometimes you just had to make emergency hires.
Yeah.
Or you had a quota you had to hit. I won't say which company, but you know, you had a quota to hit. And so, and if you don't have a pipeline, management is going to be dealing with that. And that creates a lot of friction. So that was always my thought. Like, I realized when I started doing sales that I treated recruitment like sales. Mm. But one of my key components when I was doing recruitment was just to try to get as many applicants as possible. Also, one thing, like in sales, you know, we call it MQL, marketing qualified leads, sales qualified leads, to determine the quality of the lead. But I rarely ever see recruitment teams doing the same analysis. Like, where are we getting, let's say, maybe job ad qualified leads or recruiter qualified leads, but kind of just thinking, where are you getting the qualified leads for applicants and doubling down on those areas? And I think also just the fact of actually defining what a qualified applicant is, I think that'll be going beyond what most places have.
Yeah, my number one criteria is, I think a lot of companies don't know what they want. And so that's, but I love the MQL, SQL aspect. I think that's so just so important that a lot of companies, I think, will use, like, say, a BizReach, or maybe they'll use LinkedIn Recruiter or whatever. They'll look at the stats that come from there, but not truly look at who they're hiring and where they come from. And then, like you said, put the money down where you're getting candidates from and do your marketing there, which I find strange in some ways why a lot of companies just don't do that.
Yeah, especially with how much money they spend on recruitment. And so and I think another thing kind of related to that is also, like, you know, in sales, we often reverse engineer. So let's say I want to close one corporate client. I'll need to get, let's say, I would like to get maybe, of course, it depends on your company, but we'll need to get 3 to 4 fifth meetings. We'll need to get, let's say, double the amount of fourth meetings, and just really break it down. Then, okay, like, to get how many qualified leads we have to get in the first place, and how many leads we have to get in the first place to get enough qualified leads, and just kind of reverse engineering that.
I would imagine most talent acquisition teams don't have their ratios, mate. I hate to tell
you. Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, but I think that's a fantastic point. If you're going to be, well, what gets measured gets done.
Exactly, the best way.
The other thing I love about the sales pipeline and the recruitment pipeline comparison is just to always be recruiting. If you're a hiring manager and you're leaving your recruitment to the talent acquisition team, you're doomed from the beginning, I think.
Would you elaborate?
To always be recruiting and meeting people and understanding the market and understanding who's hiring and who's not, because I think it's easy in a company to create this ivory tower and not know what's going on. And it's worth meeting people all the time, because you might have parts of your team leave. And you need to recruit quickly. And if you don't have a bench where you can bring people in, it's quite a challenge.
And I also tell founders as well, like, the ideally, if you are a CEO, I mean, you should be spending 25 to 50% of your time external. And as a result of putting yourself out there, you will get more candidates naturally, especially those who are fans of yours. I think for country managers, maybe you should use recruiters, because your options for branding yourself as a leader is pretty limited. I think the guy from Randstad does a pretty good job. I don't remember his name, but I think he does it. Or I'll say he probably does an excellent job of putting himself out there. And but yeah, for like for founders or CEOs, I always just like ideally 25 to 50%, because if you're not going to pay the price now putting yourself out there, you're going to pay the price later when you actually need people. And let's say you're going to have to like prod them to go either give them more money or find other ways to prod people to come in, as opposed to being pulled into your corporation like a magnet because you've made the ground, or what's it, you've laid the foundation, the investment. And so, and in my case, I'm probably going to, when my daughter gets a little bit older, I'll probably try to create another fast growing, I'll probably go venture capital based, possibly, unless I just move to Hawaii and just take it easy. But if I do make another big company, all the time that I'm spending right now, like appearing on podcasts, putting out blogs, doing my own podcast, Thought Leadership, it's going to return its investment in the future.
Sure. Yeah. And that's quite a jump from Hokkaido to Hawaii, but one that I think would be a good one.
So I'm originally from Hawaii, but and my family has land there. So it's the opportunity to build a house for an affordable price is still on the table.
Nice. Tyson, thank you. A wealth of knowledge. I think that the companies you're working with are probably very lucky to be working with you and having you as an advisor for them. Any last ideas that you would leave our listeners?
Yeah, let's see. If you take, I'll be very happy if you take even just one or two of the tactics I've employed or helped clients employ to use in your organization. And I think the more positive work experience that you can create, I think it'll just create a positive loop cycle where it'll make the hiring process less painful and let's say much less unnecessary suffering.
I think
but I guess my ask is, yeah, if you would, I'll say if you have the authority and the influence and would like to have a long-term approach to improving your brand as a leader, or improving your brand as an employer, both to Japanese or to foreigners, that's something I can definitely help with as well.
Great. Well, we'll put a link in the show notes to scaling your company as well as to your social media and personal sites so people can reach out and connect with you there, Tyson.
Thank you so much, David.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Now I'm doing the uptown low down, yeah.